Hello and welcome to the Lock In Podcast, the show that lifts the lid on life in the pub trade by those working in it. I'm the morning advertiser's Ed Bennington, and with me as ever are my two wonderful co-hosts, Nikki Thatcher and Heath Ball. Now, it's a new year, and as such, I've made a few... I don't even know what I'm saying.
Oh, are you okay? New year.
That is my new year resolution, is actually not to be nice.
You're not nice?
To you, Nikki and Heath, but... I've made a deliberate decision that isn't going to be something I'm going to be doing. So, Australian.
Mate, you're an amateur in a big boys game.
There we go. He started already. Australian native Heath Ball is an experienced pub operator who's bringing his own brand of misery and grumpiness to the trade for several decades. His New Year resolution is to spend more time with his family, which is why he's literally phoning in for the first episode of 2024 from a centre park near Luton. How is that, Heath?
It is a dystopian nightmare. It's like being in Logan's Run meets the Truman Show. They've obviously poisoned the water or drugged the water with tranquilizers. People walk around with these smiles on their faces like they're pretending to be happy.
Well, they're enjoying themselves.
I want to cry, Ed. I want to cry.
God's sake.
It's a sign of Britain, isn't it?
I wouldn't say that we're enjoying your misery, but we are.
I'm sure you are. Hold on.
You're normally so happy and cheery, so, you know, it's very difficult to hear you being so sad and grumpy.
It adds a whole new sort of level to the podcast, doesn't it, of Heath being less than cheerful. It's great. You can't hear a word we're saying because he's messed up.
We could say anything about him.
I know.
Yeah, great.
And there
what
we go.
What did I miss?
Nothing. MA News editor Nikki Thatcher has made the wonderful New Year's resolution to be nicer to her boss and do everything he says over the coming 12 months.
No.
And you're all witnesses to that.
No.
So all
no,
six
creepy written
listeners,
all over it.
So.
Absolutely.
Not like that. I mean, Heath, we don't all have the same employment policies as yourself. So let's just get that in there on the table. Anyway, thanks, guys, for joining me. And for you, Heath, making that huge sacrifice to avoid spending time with your family at Centre Park.
It was either sit here and do this for 2.5 hours, or it was go and hop in the water with another 50,000 people and bathe and... Yeah, all sorts of rubbish. So, yeah, I'm quite happy to be doing this in the cold outside.
On that note, this is our first episode of 2024, so we're going to be looking ahead the opportunities and challenges we're going to be facing as the year unfolds. To help us with that, we've got some great guests, including UK Hospitality's Kay Nichols, who'll be telling us what's on her radar for the year ahead. We'll be chatting about new openings with the legendary landlord and, if he turns up, Osh Rogers of the Devonshire, award-winning operators Maria Harris and Steve Harris of the Stag in Lyndhurst, and Kim Francis of the Vicarious Pub Company, whose new Bar 42 site we're currently recording in, and it's not just because your bar across the road is closed, Heath, is it?
I'm giving my team a lovely little break after Christmas, post-Christmas.
Uh-huh, yeah.
We don't want to hear your excuses.
Just can't be asked. He'd rather spend his time at Centre Park, wouldn't he?
That's it.
We will be looking at some of the challenges around staffing and utilities with S4 Labour's Richard Hartley and Nationwide Energy's Gerry O'Hara. And we'll also be looking ahead to see what opportunities operators can see with Banwell House's Toby Brett, Brewhouse and Kitchen's Chris Gumbrell, and Lounge's Alex Riley as well. But before all that, let's have a little catch-up on what's been going on. Heath, Christmas trade. I mean, you were so busy, you didn't see the wife and kids, so you're now being punished with Centre Parks. How was Christmas?
That's exactly it. I worked all of Christmas. Really busy. It's the busiest Christmas we've ever had at the Red Lion. Same with the Lockhart. And the Winlock did all right. Super busy. Everybody I'm sort of speaking to is saying they had a really good Christmas, which is great. It was a bit tired.
Were you expecting it to be that good?
Well, I think last year we had the football on, didn't we? And it snowed.
Yes.
And this year there was no football and it didn't snow. And it was really mild. So we were able to fill the marquee at the front most days.
Is it covered?
Marquee
at the front.
Oh my god! I can't honestly. I'm going to start mailing out what a marquee looks like to people. But yes, it is covered. Ed, the running joke because all my customers keep on asking me, is it covered and is it heated?
Is it heated? Yeah. Well, if it's raining, will people get wet if they sit in it?
No, don't. But anyway, it was super busy. Really good vibe. We opened Christmas Day for the first time in 7 years. And I went against the grain, and I didn't do a set menu. I just did an a la carte menu with slightly inflated prices to help cover the costs.
Can we just clarify why you open Christmas Day this year?
Because my wife and children stayed in England. Usually they go to Sweden. I was like, what do you mean you're staying? Oh, God.
You made the ultimate sacrifice of trading through Christmas just to avoid your wife and kids, basically.
Nah, it's just, I just took a view on it, and I reckon demand was so high at Christmas for Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. I wrote down all the reasons I hated doing Christmas Day, and one of them was set menus, pre-orders, all the management side of it. I thought, you know, we do our best when we just trade a busy Sunday service.
So on that list, though, Heath, when you had all the reasons that you hate Christmas, and then on the side to open, was it just because the wife and kids are in Sweden?
Yeah, well, no. I said I was going to open before. I thought she'd go to Sweden. She didn't. And I said, well, I said I'm going to open.
Happy bonus. So
she was quite good about it.
Leading up to Christmas, tended to feel a little bit maybe apprehensive because we weren't really sure what it was going to be like. So for you, Heath, do you feel like it went better than anticipated because your expectations perhaps weren't hugely high before?
Well, all my staff are giving me a bit of a negative vibe about it. They thought not doing a set menu and saying, okay, it's 100 quid a head and you have to buy your own drinks. My staff are like, you could really mess up here, because we're basically, if you just want to come and have roast turkey and a glass of wine, you could literally come and have lunch and just have roast turkey and a glass of wine. But what I found people did do is they did the opposite of that. They did the three courses. Mm. Something like 80% had three courses. They bought bottles, really nice bottles of wine. They drank well. There was a great atmosphere in the pub. It was a really good vibe. It was really, really busy. And we probably did. I think the average spend per head was about 90, mm-hmm. 90 net. So we did, but, you know, we could have done 100 quid set menu plus drinks and people wouldn't drink and the vibe would be a bit flat. It was a really good vibe in there, really buzzy. So I'm really happy, and I think I'll do the same next year.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. We've obviously started the new year. It's been a little bit... I don't want to set Heath off here, but it's a little bit depressing with... No, not with that. I'll set him off with that later. Okay. It's been a little bit depressing with the number of closures. It is difficult, isn't it? People come out of Christmas, they see what the trade's like over Christmas, and then hit January if it's not been that great. I mean, what are your thoughts on it, Heath?
I just think, like, I think probably a lot of operators are already struggling and counting on a good Christmas, and they probably didn't have the Christmas they thought they were going to have, and probably, you know, tried to be positive and then just, you know, you come into January and just took a view and just went, you know what?
Yeah, reality.
I can't see light at the end of the tunnel. Mm. I think that, you know, I mean, it's quite, you know, you've seen all the closures with Simon Rimmer and, you know, all those guys. And it's just like, I think, you know, it's quite depressing at the beginning of the year. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to change. I don't think it's going to be a lot more closures.
A lot of it's restaurants. At the moment, I know there are pubs closing. There will be some people listening to this who are kind of screaming that actually pubs are closing, and they are. But it does seem that restaurants are more vulnerable because you only go to a restaurant for a meal. It's a treat. It's not a social space in the same way that the pub is.
Mm. No, I think we're a lot more diverse and a lot more flexible in that sense.
But it is worrying when you see these businesses going. Then. It doesn't create a great landscape, does it, overall?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't instill confidence. It'd be quite interesting, chatting to the other guys later, how they see investment into the sector and, you know, what they're, you know, especially like Alex Riley and, you know, Chris and all that want to see what they think. But, I think, you know, it's going to be doom and gloom for a while. I don't think we're going to – what did Rishi say today? He's saying it won't be a spring election. It'll be the end of the year.
Yeah.
Great. Do you know what I mean? So that's not, you know, we're all counting on change of government to sort of understand the sector, and it's just going to get worse.
Yeah.
So,
but will they though? Are we pinning our hopes on something that may actually not happen?
What? The only thing that could turn around and try and save it and do, you know, like the typical Tory turn around and go, right, we'll do tax cuts and we'll give you all this and we'll make you feel good about the Tory party. Please vote for us at the end of the year.
Mm.
Could be that. You know, they've been punishing us for how long now? Mm. You know, it's, you know, now it's nice to see the sectors all getting behind VAT as a lowering VAT is the main initiative that can help the sector.
Well, that'll be something to talk to Kate about later, and a nice try to get him to go off on the rant there, Nicky. So, well done. Well done, Heath. You've grown.
It's because he's not had a drink.
It is true. He is drinking 0.0 Peroni at the moment.
So depressing.
Other non-alcoholic beers are available.
The only one that got.
The story you actually flagged this, Heath, the other one that amused me this morning, obviously with January, you've got the dry January and the veganuary, which is the latest misery kind of that people try and inflict on us. But Burger and Beyond have gone the sort of 180 degrees in the other way to that, and have taken anything vegan off their menu and just shoving meat on there.
I kind of like, because I think there is eventually, we've seen a backlash, we have in the last couple of years, I've seen a decline in vegetarian sales, and we've seen all these big investment, you know, people plow money into these big investments like Lewis Hamilton and his burger concept, vegan burger concept, and everyone thought it was going to be the future of food. And I think people just got tired of it, and especially post-COVID. People want to have a good time and they want to enjoy themselves, and where before they go, oh yeah, okay, this is good for the good of the planet. I think people are just a bit worn down with it. And I think, you know, Burger and Beyond, get on them. I think they'll actually be quite busy. I think people, there'll be a group of people who've just had enough of getting, you know, save the planet, all this sort of stuff. So I think I can see why there'll be a bit of backlash.
And unfortunately, we have almost run out of time there, so we can't even talk about Sir Tim Martin.
Oh, God, that's brilliant, isn't it?
which I was expecting Heath not to want to talk about at all. So
Tory donor, Brexiteer, basically helped scuttle the country into shit fight. And he's there getting a knighthood. Yeah, great. Well done, Tim.
It's gone down well with the industry. It's gone down very well with most pubs. It's a delight. So, on that note, we shall park that one there. You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast, and we're looking at some of the opportunities and challenges facing us in the year ahead. Now, there's been plenty of talk about how trade is tough right now, and we've got our own personal doom merchant in Heath Ball, dialing in from Centre Parks. But despite that, people are still opening up new sites and expanding their businesses. And we've actually got three of these mad fools with us now. We've got Maria and Steve Harris, who, despite running two top venues in the New Forest, Hampshire sort of area, they've just taken on the pub next door to one of their existing sites, which was is an interesting move. And we've also got Kim Francis, an ex-Enterprise Inns top dog, who's launched his own pub co, Vicarious Inns. So let's start off. I mean, Maria, not many people would choose to take on the pub next door. Steve, tell us. Maria, Steve, one of you, tell us about that.
Well, we're in hers now, so it's perfect. Yeah. We don't see each other. it was either... we're just a very small village high street, so we're three pubs, so we've got two of them now, and we might as well compete against ourselves rather than compete against anybody else, and we'll get a bit precious, don't we, about our punters.
Yeah, but I also think there was a need for something different, and we recognised that, because having the pub here for 3 years, people were crying out for something different, and you know, the one at the road's a big chain one. And, you know, we're very similar to what they offer from a food point of view. So we want to do something a bit more out of character, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I think with Maria's wacky ideas, she certainly created that next door.
Okay.
And I think for us, it's certainly proving very interesting at the moment. There's a lot of interest in it.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are you doing? How are you differentiating the two sites then? Things are so close to you. I mean, literally, they're like 10 yards apart, aren't they?
And I think just coming back to what Maria said, it was either if we didn't take it on, someone else would have took it on, and then we've been in competition. I don't mind competition, but you know what? I'd rather not be. I'd rather get the monopoly myself. So I think one of the reasons we decided to take it on is because we identified that there was a niche market to have it more of a, I don't want to use the term sporting bar, but somewhere where people could come along, enjoy sports, have smaller plates, have fresh to plate, in a sort of a cozy, relaxed environment with pool table, dartboard, and there's nothing around here that does that. And I think, you know, in the six suites we've been open, we're just every day we're seeing trade pick up and people talking about it, which is really, really nice.
Brilliant. Okay. And I see we've got a very a late joiner here, Osh Rogers, who has just joined us now. I was slightly worried about you, Osh, because you were a bit late. So we actually did mention you at the beginning there. So apologies for that.
No worries. I'm a bit worried about myself sometimes, but here I am. Nice to see you all.
Mystery guest arriving at the last minute. Maria, Steve, so what have you learned? So was it purely just a case of keep out the competition, or did you see a real opportunity to do something different in the year ahead with that site?
Yeah, I think it was more the opportunity. So we've renovated the whole of the downstairs, because it's got rooms above as well. So the whole of the downstairs has been everything. We've decorated it using the whole high street,
right.
The furniture, all the light fittings, all the decor has come from the high street. So it's a bit of a celebration. So when someone says, oh, there's nothing in Lindas High Street other than cafes and charity shops and a couple of pubs, we'll say, well, actually, come in the Melmans and have a look. Because it's very quirky, but it's kind of back to pub basics, so it's sort of somewhere for everyone. We've got not many youngsters in the village, and there's nowhere for them to go, so we've got the doghouse now, that's got games rooms, we've got pool table, darts board. And it's about, we're sort of bringing old and new in, and quite funny, as we expected, with the food being funky to match the interior, we thought it would be a lot of the youngsters in that sort of street food vibe, finger food, and ever-changing to celebrate what the forest offers. It's all the oldies, and they're sweating, going bright red in the face over jerk chicken, and it's quite funny.
They're coming in to see Steve, are they? Oh, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, I don't mind that, Ed, because they drink more, so it's fine.
Give them the spicy stuff and then Mojdemar. Brilliant. Thanks, guys.
So it's definitely about the opportunity. And also it opens up what we found in this little high street is that bringing in new entertainment that people may not have experienced before. And the Stag is the great space for that, but there's such a big gap in the market for more events on a larger scale, so we can do that across both sites, offering something different.
Fantastic, great stuff. And Kim, coming to you then, I mean, you must have learnt a lot from all your years in the trade, particularly at EI, but you still went ahead and opened a pub.
I know, I must be mad.
So why did you feel that the time was right?
I have asked myself that question a few times. It was, to be honest with you, it was the circumstance of the timing, really. It was an opportunistic move. My business partner, Ben Ellis, who he's got his own vineyard, as you do, and I used to be involved in beer and still am involved in a couple of companies, including Hofmeister. So we, over a beer, we were hatched a plan. We thought, well, there aren't many places to go that we like to go ourselves. And probably more importantly, we had the prompt from our wives saying, where would they like to go? And so you put that together with the experience I had, and we thought it'd be a good idea to start up a pub company. And we spotted the first opportunity here in Hayward Heath. We just realised there was a gap in the market.
Because there's not a lot really in Hayward Heath. I mean, there's not many decent bars. Is there, Heath?
No, I wouldn't know any.
I'm a big fan of Lockhart.
Thank you.
It's closed today. That's why we're here.
And I think the thing for me is, you know, none of us should be afraid of competition. Actually, I think that's healthy. But there's always an opportunity to be different or to be better. And I think the thing with Hayward's Heath is that, you know, the demographics are really strong. I don't think there are enough quality restaurants and bars and pubs to service the community and the opportunity here. So creating a bit of a circuit in this part of town is, I think, is quite healthy. It's quite diverse as well in terms of the extremes. And as I say, we saw an opportunity just to go after kind of the premium drinks end of the market, and particularly make it, I hate this label, but female friendly.
Yeah.
You know, for us, that was very much, you know, it's not a craft beer bar. It's a, we hope it's an inclusive, welcoming bar, which we sell outstanding quality wines. We sell a really great range of beers, but the thing that overrides that is it has to be with great hospitality and
comes great
quality.
Responsibility. No, sorry, it's a different quote. Osh, I mean, you've owned a pub. I don't think many people have heard of it. It's a little pub in a small place called Soho, I think.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind of a few weeks. We opened on the 5th of November. Already feels like I've been here for 15 years, and it's gone quite well.
And I mean, you're probably the most, well, no, Maria and Steve, you're probably open and similar to the time. But Osh, you've been planning that for quite a while, haven't you?
Well, it's always been in the back of my mind that I should do it, and the real planning started about 2 years ago. Mm. So there's been a lot of thought gone into it.
And I guess the landscape changed considerably over those 2 years. I mean, go on.
I think all of us can agree that since I suppose February 2020, when we got hit with the pandemic, I think the landscape just keeps changing every week. And it seems to me that every time we make a plan and we sort of enact the plan, we need a new plan. And I'm sort of used to it now. There's very, very, very little smooth road ahead of us or behind us for that matter. And I think we've got to be adapting and changing and moving with the times all the time, because there's always a surprise.
So you wouldn't say that the challenge, I mean, if you were starting out now, the challenges you're facing wouldn't put you off. It's more a case of just adapting the business to meet those. It wouldn't put you off opening a new site now.
Well, I think, you know, the old phrase, a rising tide lifts all boats. The opposite is also true, because we're all in the same waters. And for me, echoing what your other guests are saying, I think if we put something together that guests and customers are likely to want to come and enjoy and spend time in, then at least you're on the front foot. And then hopefully you've got some clients spending money and you can make some profit out of it, despite the fact that overheads are ridiculously high.
I mean, Heath, you are generally a miserable bugger at the best of times, but if an opportunity came up, would you open the site at the moment?
Yeah, I would do. While everyone's just fluffing around and getting panicking, I think it's a good opportunity to pick up something. Was it Confucius who said, where there's chaos, there's opportunity? So I think there's opportunities out there. It's just finding the right place.
Well, I think, unfortunately, there's going to be lots of opportunities in the months and coming ahead where businesses are going to be closing.
And Kim, I mean, you're a pub co with one pub at the moment. You're obviously looking to grow that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started, just in terms of context, we started looking in the market probably 18 months, 2 years ago. And I think it's fair to say that it took a while post-pandemic before the market started at producing opportunities. But what we saw initially was it was on the market for a good reason. Either it had limited opportunity, it was broken, or it was far too expensive, or all three, to be fair. We've seen a spike in new sites becoming available over the last 3 months. And I think, you know, the headwinds we face, you know, everything's going to come home to roost, I think, in the next 3 to 6 months. I think we're going to see a seismic change in terms of small independent operators and also some of the bigger guys. And to paraphrase what was said earlier on, there brings opportunity. We're looking at between 4 and 6 sites over the next 18 months. We'd like to... there's a couple of sites in Brighton, Hove, Shoreham, and possibly Horsham as an idea. We think those are areas which there's bags of opportunity, bags of competition. But if you're good or even great in terms of the offer, then there's opportunity there to be had.
Perfect. And Steve and Maria, I mean, how optimistic are you guys at the moment? You've got 3 sites. No. You've grown very quickly. So you're pointing at Steve.
Steve looks at opportunities, and then he tells me after he signed the deal, and then says, "There we go, have another pub," and then leads me to it.
Steve, come on now. What are you eyeing up?
No, I mean, I like to look, and I think at this stage, I think I just want to stabilise what we've got. I think it's... it's all good models. Each one's got its own unique selling point. Each one's got its good teams in it, you know, led by Maria. She does all the hard work. I just drink the profits, you know, that Ed. So, but I think, you know, but in all seriousness, I think we would, but not right now. And I think, you know, in time, if a superb opportunity comes up and we're approached at the right time or we find something, then I never say never. But on the flip side of that, I think I don't mind sharing, you know, we had another pub in Salisbury that we had to sell very quickly because it was milking money, and we only opened it and it was open 6 months, and we had to sell it very quickly because of the demographics of where it was and what was happening around Salisbury at the time with the local council. Mm. So, you know, we lost quite a lot of money, and it's a big hit when it happens.
Yeah.
But it's all about, I suppose, you know, I suppose doing that research, looking at what opportunities there are, how we can make it better.
Yeah.
So we've seen both sides, you know, the good side for the three that we got,
yeah,
the bad side, the one, yeah, that we sold up. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. And not being afraid to make those tough decisions and pull the plug when necessary. I mean, Osh, you obviously are doing very well with the Devonshire no sign of pulling the plug at the moment. Are you looking to expand? Is it going to be a Devonshire 2? I mean, you've not got much.
Absolutely
on your hands,
not. And you know, you've said that from the start. Charlie and I always wanted to do one. I don't want to stretch myself thin. I've always wanted to be a pub landlord, to be there all the time, spend as much time as I can with the guests and enjoy it and try and drink the profits as well. To say what Chris said. No, we've no plans to do another one, and I'm definitely not looking at anything. And even if something came up, we definitely wouldn't do it.
We shall hold you to that. Yeah. We shall hold you to that. Brilliant, guys. Okay, well, we're out of time, but thank you very much for that. This is the Lock-In Podcast with myself, Ed Beddington, Nicky Thatcher and Heath Ball. Now, we're looking forward in this episode into the brave new year. And I'm delighted we've got Trade Association head honcho Kate Nichols from UK Hospitality joining us now. Kate, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. I mean, if Heath stops messing with his microphone there and throwing it around, that would be particularly
sorry.
Helpful. Let's get a sense, Kate, from you. I mean, what are the big issues on your radar for 2024? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I mean, I think the start of 2024 has not been great. We've had some pretty grim news coming through from the industry with a number of high-profile closures and casualties. So 2024, although we did have a better Christmas than many anticipated, sadly 2024 has started as 2023 ended, with a large number of closures of sites, that unrelenting cost pressure and the cost of living crisis. It feels as though we're a bit of deja vu. So what I'm looking forward to in 2024 is that the Bank of England sees some common sense, that we can see interest rates start to come down as inflation falls, to give a bit of breathing space on debt, and that the budget on the March the 6th will give some further relief to the hospitality sector.
Good stuff. I mean, what are going to be your big priorities? What are you really going to be pushing government for over the coming months?
Well, I think it's not just about pushing government. It's about pushing the opposition too. It's about making sure that we're getting into the general election manifestos. This is going to be a critical time. If I'm honest and brutally honest, I'm not confident that we'll get much in the budget that will alleviate some of those pressures that we're seeing. But what we have set out is a three-point plan to help to boost investment in people, places, planet and well-being and communities. So we want to see a fairer tax system, reduce the rate of VAT, reform business rates to be able to give some breathing space to businesses, but also to allow for investment. At the moment, those businesses that are surviving are clinging on by their fingertips. We need to be able to get that headroom to be able to get the model working again, businesses viable, profitable, so that they can invest. We need root and branch reform of business rates so that we can offset and rebalance the economy to make sure it's fit for purpose. Alongside that, we need reform of the Landlord and Tenant Act and an end to upward-only rent reviews to make sure that sticks. And then thirdly and finally, reform the apprenticeship levy so that we can invest in our people, use that money to invest in work-based training, skills training, and those transferable skills that we know hospitality equips people with that will give them skills for life.
I mean, we've heard today that the government has ruled out a spring election. I mean, probably not a surprise to you, I imagine. What's your take on that?
I don't think it's that surprising, to be honest, although if you listened to what the Prime Minister said, he said that his working assumption was that there'd be an autumn election. I think that had been everybody's working assumptions. That's not quite the same as ruling it out. He said he had a lot to get on with to make sure that He was busy addressing priorities. Well, the key priorities that we've got, as we've set out, we need to get that fairer tax regime coming through now. We need to get that breathing space now on those issues to do with COVID loans and debts and energy costs to be able to make sure we've got an economy that doesn't have a hard landing. So if he is ruling it out, I don't think it's as firm as ruling it out, but if his working assumption is leave it till the autumn in order to get stuff done, plenty of stuff to be getting done in our space.
You mentioned at the start there that we've seen some pretty high profile closures already. I mean, we're only 4 days in as we're recording this. I mean, what's your sense? Do you think we're going to see more of that, or do you think we're going to see people hanging on a bit longer?
I fear we're going to see more of it. I mean, beginning of January is always the worst time. You do always get high-profile casualties because that's when people have traded through Christmas, sit down in the new year, realise they've got quarterly rent payments that have just fallen on their doorsteps, that they've got to pull out that money for the VAT return. They've got business rate bills. They've got national living wage increases going through in April. That's when the reality hits that, you know, they've run out of road and they can't go on. Simon Rimmer's case, slightly different. He's got a landlord that's put the rent up 33%.
Yeah.
And we just need to have some breathing space there and some common sense from landlords, banks, energy companies that don't push more businesses into insolvency than need otherwise be the case.
And if we do end up with an election, we do end up with a new government, I mean, what's your sense in terms of if we see a straightforward swap, Labour, for Conservatives, what do you think we're going to, what are the benefits going to be? Are there going to be any benefits? Are any of these things going to be listened to?
Well, I think the challenge is that whichever government comes in and, you know, whatever happens at the election, you're going to have a change of government. There is limited room to manoeuvre in terms of public finances. The economy is not in great shape. There's no magic growth lever to pull in the same way that there's no magic money tree. So I think that is going to be the challenge for the sector as a whole. You know, during COVID, we were a special case. We did have special situations. All parts of the economy are crying out for support at the moment. That's the challenge. The advantage that we've got is that we know that two out of three of those asks I set out, business rates reform and apprenticeship levy reform, are in the Labour Party manifesto so far. We have to see the details. We have to make sure that that works for hospitality. But in that, I can't remember who it was who sang it, but two out of three ain't bad. Let's see what they can do on VAT.
I was going to say VAT is a big one, though, isn't it? That's the one I think that people are really, really crying out for, that reform, that change, because that's going to make a big difference.
It is the thing that we know makes the biggest difference. It worked during COVID. It keeps prices low to consumers. It gives businesses the breathing space. It helps them absorb those costs. It is, however, a very big cost to the Exchequer, and it would be particularly challenging. But look, the last time we were in this kind of economic mess, Gordon Brown did cut VAT. He cut the headline rate of VAT. He didn't introduce a specific rate for hospitality, but he did cut VAT. So we know that the Labour Party is more receptive to that argument. It is going to be a big challenge, though. Whichever government comes in has no money. That note that Liam Byrne left at the end of 2010 that the Tories keep flashing around, there's no money left. There genuinely is no money available, and that's the hard reality. You know, I get lots of operators will come through to me, and I saw Heath nodding vigorously about VAT would make the biggest difference. We all know it would. I'm not stupid. I do know what we need. The challenge is getting the government of any political persuasion to be able to afford that level of cost. It is.
I'm sure the argument's been for a while, though, on our side, is it's better having some VAT as opposed to all these businesses going to the wall and losing income, losing jobs, you know. So surely I just can't see why they can't see, even if they did VAT for a year, 10%.
But I think the problem that he faces, the government view, and having spoken to them, it's the expectation that those businesses just regenerate and you know, someone else steps forward and takes that on and they keep going. So the money keeps coming in. I think, Kate, do you feel like, because we're facing this perfect storm, you know, some of these, you know, when you're seeing operators like Simon Rimmer going under, the Tony Rudd, people like that, do you think that's a bit of a wake-up call? Do they actually start to then go, well, actually, we're not going to see that regeneration? Or do they just not get it?
I think they do get it. I think the Bank of England and the Treasury see it as a price that is worth paying. These are very tough economic decisions that they are making. And let's be under no illusion, what's happening in the economy, that hard landing, the flatlining of growth, that's not just in hospitality, it's across the service sector. That's deliberate policy. They want people to stop spending in order to bring down inflation more rapidly, and that leads to a hard landing for the economy. And unfortunately, we are the collateral damage as part of that, as is retail, as are other service sectors. It's not that they don't get it. They know what's going to happen. They know what comes through. But you're right, Ed. You know, you speak to lots of people within government and the opposition. We're a victim of our own success. We're an entrepreneurial, dynamic, vibrant sector. It's cheap to start up. You can get people who will come into business and do start up in business. Everybody wants independence thriving on the high street. Normally, you would get that. You would get that churn. Businesses always fail. People will come and take their place. What you haven't got is that headroom of investment to allow that to happen, but it will come back. Yeah. You know, the other analogy that people use with me in government is that it's the phoenix. We will always regenerate. The challenge at the moment is we're losing good operators, we're losing otherwise viable operators. The model needs that reset, and there's fundamental elements to that model that don't work, but undoubtedly they will in the future as we go forward.
Absolutely. And let's try and end on the positive. Are there any positives? Are there any positives for you, Kate? What do you think? What is there out there?
Yeah, are you going to make me quote Ian Drury, reasons to be cheerful? 1, 2, 3. 1, inflation is coming down, and it's coming down quicker than perhaps a lot of people thought. That should put pressure on the Bank of England to be able to reduce interest rates more quickly. It's going to be a very tough Q1, but that should mean that from March onwards, you can start to see that coming through. And I think, you know, on the interest rate piece, you saw today as we were recording the lowest interest rate deals on the market for 7 months. So that's starting to have an impact. That means that people will have more disposable cash. They will have more disposable income in their pockets. They'll start to feel a little bit better about it. The government is also giving people a tax cut in January. You'll get an NIC cut, which again feeds directly through. People will see more money in their pay packets at the end of January than they did in December. So there's two big steps forward. And third, you know, we are still seeing people, that we will see a return of international visitors and business tourists. Now, that doesn't affect everybody, but you will see people starting to come back in, and the inbound tour operators are seeing record levels of bookings coming through. So we are set to get back to the pre-COVID levels of footfall in our towns and city centres, which will be a boost for everybody as those events come back. So those are three big things that should mean you get more people coming back more frequently and spending more, and that ability to be able to afford higher prices, that pressure cooker will ease. And the other really positive news is that every single tracker we've done of consumer sentiment over the course of 2023, even in the dark days of the Liz Truss government and everything else, all of them showed 7 out of 10 people said that if they had any disposable income, their top priority for using it would be to spend on eating and drinking out. So all of those things put together, if we can get through the next 3 months, should be a much more positive 2024.
Fantastic. Let's end on the positive before he says something negative. Brilliant. Thank you very much, Kate. This is the Lock In Podcast, and we're looking ahead into 2024. Now, it's easy to get bogged down with all the challenges, and we appreciate that many of you out there might struggle to focus beyond them at the moment. But let's take a more positive look now and consider some of the opportunities out there. To help us with that, we've got three great operators joining us. Chris Gumbrell, CEO of Brewhouse & Kitchen, Toby Brett, CEO of Banwell House Pubs, and Alex Riley, Chairman of the Fast Growing Loungers Group. So, guys, welcome. Thanks for joining us. So let's look in general at how we're seeing the market at the moment. What's trade like? Toby, do you want to kick us off? What's things like with you?
Do you know what? After a miserable year, I couldn't be happier at the moment. We've finished December 19% up on previous year, 12% up on 2019. One of our sites was 30% up on last year. It feels like people have welcome the pub back, keen to get back into the pub, want to use it, want to fit into the community. You know, we can be pessimistic about January, but this week hasn't been horrific as some January start.
Okay, fantastic. Chris, what
it
about
is,
you?
It is Thursday, Toby.
Yeah. But don't let Captain Doom in the corner there derail things. This is going to be more positive. Shut up, Heath. Chris.
Enjoy St. Mark's.
Chris, how about you? How have you found...
it's been good. I mean, I think, echoing Toby's points, it's not been the easiest of years, really, is it? Certainly the storms in October and November. No, Christmas came alive for us. I mean, it started for us with Black Friday, because we do a lot of sales of experiences, and that was monster for us this year. We were hugely, hugely up. So probably telling us consumers maybe cutting down on the regularity of normal visits, but they're still looking for good experiences and something for a bit different. So Christmas gifting for us was up about 48% on it the year before in terms of sales. So we were really, really happy with that. Yeah, Christmas very strong. We had double-digit growth through the period. And Christmas Day, for some reason, just went off like a rocket, and we didn't do that much different from previous years. We had 32% up on Christmas Day food, so that was great. I'm jury out, really, at the moment. It's hammering down with rain here. We're very South Coast based, so I'm not going to bank the week until the week is over, but it's always nice when you get New Year's Eve fall into your first week of January. So kind of distorts the like-for-likes a little bit, so which is quite handy. But no, well, no complaints around December. Absolutely fantastic. And let's hope for better improvement on costs now.
Indeed, indeed. Alex, what about you? How are you seeing things?
Pretty good. Yeah, we're very pleased with how the last few weeks have been. We've traded, I think, very much as we expected. It's been strong. I think, Cozy Club has had a really, really strong month. December's the month it really comes alive, really. Lounge is much more sort of steady business across the year, but cozy December is a really important month, and it's been good. You know, we've been very happy the way it's traded, and I think to echo the points that others have made, you know, it's continuing. You know, that sort of, you know, the sort of uptick in sales is continuing into this week. I mean, we're obviously geographically quite well spread, and we've got quite a lot of areas of the UK where schools haven't gone back because they didn't break up until very late. So I think we generally look over a 6-week period just to sort of iron out any of the quirks you have with regards to how bank holidays fall and how obviously New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve, etc. fall. And I think we're hoping it's going to be very encouraging, positive sales momentum for us.
Fantastic. I mean, you've been expanding massively over the last few years. I mean, do you expect that to continue over 2024? What are you looking for there?
We're very much sort of, we're in a rhythm at the moment where, you know, we're targeting sort of 34, 35 new sites a year. And that's what we've got effectively locked in for this calendar year. In order to get that amount of sites in the on the pipeline, you have to sort of bait them in quite a way out. So the pipeline is nicely congested with sites, and I think we've seen, you know, the kind of opportunities that have presented themselves. You know, we've seen some great opportunities, and whilst you could argue the market has got a little bit tougher in terms of just there being a bit more competition for the kind of sites we look at, which is retail, change of use opportunities. There's still a lot of opportunity out there. You know, we've got another raft of bank closure lists that have come through today. We're finding great properties, sometimes with, you know, sort of CapEx challenges because of the nature of the building. But, you know, they make terrific sites for us. So, you know, we're very, you know, very comfortable and very confident growing as aggressively this year as we have in previous years.
Would you look outside of those sites? I mean, I want to remain positive, but we are probably going to see people going under, businesses closing. We've seen a few this week. Would that tempt you to look at some of those sort of more maybe non-traditional lounger sites, or are you going to stick with your knitting and what you know?
I think, you know, we have converted quite a lot of former restaurant sites over the last few years. You know, we probably, I think from memory, we probably converted 6 former Prezzos, for example. We've converted a few Pizza Express sites. And there's a couple of opportunities that come up where there's been an existing food and drink operator in where actually we think the site is really good and the pitch is good, but they just haven't made it work. We're just opened in fact, the last site we opened just before Christmas was in Caerphilly, and that was a restaurant operator that had sadly got under. So I think, we're probably seeing more of those kind of opportunities presenting themselves. But for us, I think still our bread and butter is looking at looking at more traditional conversions of retail. We actually opened, we took on a former harvester actually in Paignton, which opened just before Christmas as well, and that had a terrific start. Which so I think that there's opportunities there, and sometimes if a brand has been in there too long and it's a bit tired, it just needs a refresh. But we've always been quite wary of taking on existing units historically, because sometimes there can be a bit of a stigma attached with the fact that there's been a succession of failure in those sites.
Yeah.
So for us, converting from something that's a different use is always a bit more preferable.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chris, what about you? What opportunities are you looking at in the year ahead?
Well, we're still looking, really. I think we're keeping our, I think to reflect what Alex said, I think the market's quite soft at the moment, so it's a good time to look, but you have to be careful. And that's the key thing, and you've got to be careful around things that have possibly have failed or gone badly wrong. So, but yeah, keeping our cards close to our chest, talking to agents at the moment, and our model is still to prefer freehold where we can get it. Mm. And money's a little bit expensive at the moment as well. It'd be nice and helpful if interest rates were to come down a little bit. But yeah, we're looking around. We've had a great year. We only did one opening last year, one new acquisition, which was Chelmsford, which has shot the lights out for us. Great unit, right opposite the main line into London as well. So really happy. But yeah, not compelled to rush. You never stop tightening the nuts and finessing the business and making sure that everything is right. There's a lot of work still to do on cost control and conversion as well. And not without its challenges again this year. But we're looking. Nothing in the pipe yet.
Absolutely. Not confirmed, anyway. And Toby, how about you? What are you looking at in terms of opportunity?
Yeah, keeping my eyes open. There's not a huge amount around in our area that fits our profile. I echo what Chris says. Money is expensive at the moment, so the traditional model of borrowing it cheap and being able to make a return put some pressures on. But we've got opportunities within our own estate. We've had a couple of planning permissions come through at the back end of last year that we can invest in our sites and grow the business that way. And I guess we're feeling confident that the business can continue growing with that level of investment.
Mm. I mean, Chris, you mentioned sort of money being a bit more expensive. I mean, what do we anticipate happening in 2024? Are we going to see, how optimistic are you of a fall in interest rates?
Well, I think interest rates have got to come down. But I think, whilst, obviously Bank of England has to sit independently of government, that the government, I'm sure, current present government are crossing their fingers, hoping that that will, because people vote with their pockets ultimately. We all know that the economy is everything and how people feel is everything, and ultimately they'll blame everything on the incumbent government. So I'm sure they're hoping that interest rates come down. We need to see more cash in our guests' pockets. We know that's good for our business, and as Toby has said, interest rates coming down will open up investment acquisition work for everybody within the sector. Just get the wheels turning again. What will happen in reality, I don't really know. I think they're going to need to see us just same period of stable inflation before anything starts to really, really move. Good news is that we're starting to see food settle down a little bit more than it has been. It was a bit of a rodeo horse to ride last year in terms of food inflation in the last 18 months, really, and energy as well. So all those things are still there to manage. I think Toby's very wise, the same as us. We were looking at planning opportunities, room conversions to rooms, extensions. Those things seem to be more attractive at the moment, a way of spending your money, but except we're freehold based. Leases are out there, but as Alex mentioned, you have to be careful with failed sites.
Yeah, absolutely. And Alex, last one from you. I mean, optimism, what are you optimistic about in 2024? What are you hoping for?
A change of government would be quite handy. I think we're all sick to death of the Tories. I think it you know, it's been on everyone's wish list really with regards to what we might get with, in terms of just recognition from the Treasury that, you know, that the sector is in a lot of strife. I mean, clearly, I sit here in a fortunate position where our business is thriving and doing very well, and you know we never sort of take that for granted. But there are lots of very small independent operators who are really under the cosh at the moment, and clearly we're seeing a lot of failure in the SME sort of sector, and that's really depressing because you know these businesses, you know, I know from having been a small business ourselves not that many years ago. Could easily be the big businesses of the future, and then they've been squeezed to kingdom come by all manner of stealth tax, you know, and government's sort of unwillingness to intervene with regards to energy costs, etc. So I think, you know, we've got to be optimistic that things, it feels like they can't really get any worse. There's been just so many punches that we've had to roll with. And I think, you know, if interest rates do start to drop a little bit, and there's a sort of general sense, you know, we allow ourselves as a country to maybe think positively for a change instead of constantly trying to find the next car crash. The consumer will probably, you know, repay that sort of level of confidence by using us more. But I think, you know, the sector is under a lot of pressure, but there is also a lot of reasons to be cheery. I think, you know, we are a very resilient sector. And I think those of us that are thriving are doing so because we're also putting good products out there and we're giving customers what they want at a price that they can afford.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Thank you, guys. That is all we've got time for. Heath, there you go. Positive thinking. That's I don't know why I'm looking at you with that, but brilliant. Thank
the only
you,
positive there is hopefully the government change.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right, guys. Thank you very much. Listening to the Lock-In Podcast with myself, Ed Bennington, Heath Ball and Nikki Thatcher. And we're looking ahead to 2024. Now, there's some big challenges facing many operators at the moment. To help us consider those, I'm delighted to welcome special guests Jerry O'Hara from Nationwide Energy and Richard Hartley of S4 Labour. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Good evening. Happy New Year to you all.
Indeed, nice to see you. We've been through this a few times. Nikki doesn't let us say Happy New Year now because it's one day beyond New Year.
It's not one day.
And she's the New Year version of the Grinch, I think, is the best description for her.
I'll let you off. Don't do it again.
Right. So let's start with energy and utilities. It's a nice, easy topic, that one. Before he starts frothing at the mouth, Jerry, last year saw huge turbulence in the market. We saw prices skyrocketing. I think it was probably more than just last year. But what are we looking at in 2024? What do you think it's going to hold with your crystal ball?
Well, actually, the peak was in August 22. So we're now about 17 months out. And in reality, over the last 12 months, the commodity cost has probably come down by about 60% from where it was at the start of 2023, and we're now sitting about somewhere like 12% of the price at the peak, which right. to kind of remind ourselves, because you have to look it up because it seems so unbelievable. At the peak, the wholesale cost the government quoted for electricity was 76 pence. We're now talking about 8 pence, and gas was 25 pence. We're now talking about 3 pence. So that's the level of change. Despite all that good news of where the market has been, I think the question is now, how much further does it or can it fall? I think in terms of the commodity cost, industry experts seem to be suggesting that we're going to be about double the traditional or pre-pandemic commodity cost. And if that's the case, then we're just about there. Mm. So therefore, I would suggest that there's maybe not much more scope for commodity costs to fall. But of course, the market has been in reverse for 18 months, and we can't be sure that that decline won't continue. But clearly, if you're at 3p, there's only so much further you can drop. Mm. I think it's the non-commodity costs and particularly supplier elements that are the real issues, because the suppliers are undoubtedly still keeping more of a margin on the gas and electricity rates they're offering customers to secure things like the bad debt. I mean, looking, I do a sample of customer contract rates every fortnight, and in the last month, they've dropped, gas has dropped by about 18% and electricity by about 10%. So what we're looking at is a average unit rate of about 28 pence for electricity and about 7p for gas. The other thing I would think is important to mention, because I know a lot of customers, a lot of pub operators are really infuriated by it, is the way that standing charges are rising. And for some customers, what that can mean is they were paying £6 a day, talking about bigger pubs, half hourly meters, but you're still talking in a situation where somebody was maybe paying £6 a day and they're now looking at £36 a day. It's like a £10,000 per annum increase for no apparent reason. And although some suppliers are undoubtedly varying the mix between putting money on the or margin on the standing charge relative to the unit rate, there's a lot of additional third-party costs coming down the line what the suppliers are simply putting on to customers.
Is that, I mean, that is the question, because a lot of people in the sector would just feel they're being, ripped off or taken advantage of the situation.
At least.
Yes, I'm sure I could see his sort of steam start to come out of his ears then. I mean, is that the case? Is there any legitimacy behind those increases?
Well, I think absolutely, because what's happened is the government and Ofgem's strategy to pay for, you know, the essential improvements to the gas and electricity network, particularly the electricity network, hasn't really worked this century, because what they did was put a scheme in place which made the really big users, the energy intensive industries, the big supermarkets, etc., pay for the majority of it because they were the biggest consumers. But all that happened is you were moved to a situation where they were such high users and these costs were so significant that they could in fact bring in strategies. They would have generators, they'd be able to take their supplies offline. So therefore avoiding these charges quite legitimately. But of course that shortfall then is picked up by the small business, well, medium to small business, and of course domestic customers.
So it's a classic case of government in sort of action backfiring and impacting on other people instead.
Yeah, unintended consequences.
Indeed, that is the phrase I was reaching for and missing quite spectacularly. Brilliant. Okay, Jerry. I mean, you think it's going to stay where it is then? You think 2024 we're going to see a fairly static sort of utilities market?
I don't expect there to be a great change, but I think the good news for so many pub operators is the rates they are currently on are so much higher than what they're likely to be offered as a renewal. You know, we've got customers who are agreeing contracts which are £10,000, £20,000 less than they're currently paying. So those cost savings will undoubtedly feed through, because the price has been so high for so long, there are very few people coming out of a contract when they were paying, you know, 14, 15p for the electricity or 3p for the gas.
Yeah.
So if I was coming, in theory, Jerry, I'm coming out of contract at one of my pubs in October on electricity. How long would you suggest I lock in for going forward?
Well, what they're saying is that they don't expect there to be any significant reduction for the next couple of years. I would certainly say at this point, not for any more than 2 years, 1 or 2 years, but given you're looking at agreeing in October, and what I would suggest is the strategy for an October renewal is wait till you get into April, May, because we'll be through the winter, albeit gas reserves, I think, at the end of last year. So the 31st of December, European gas storage levels were at something like 87%. So there's almost no chance of a shock to the market. Of course, that'll happen tomorrow.
Well, I've got, that's my electricity. My gas expires in end of March.
Yeah, but the relationship, because about roughly just less than half of our electricity is generated by gas, they're pretty heavily correlated. So whether it's gas or electricity, they move kind of in tandem. All I'm saying is if you've got a renewal in October, I would suggest you look at it April, May, when we're clear of the winter and there's no real expectation of a shock. For somebody who's has a contract up in March, I would certainly be saying agree that before you go into the winter, so maybe more like August, September. So, yeah. I think the challenge is always that the fact the market has operated in a way that's entirely counterintuitive for the last 18 months.
So in summary, you're knackered, Heath, basically, on that front. So you should have done it.
I got screwed so much on all the pubs on these. Like, you know what I mean? What the government did was criminal. You know, locked into silly contracts and they rip away the support. It was, you know, one pub I was paying the equivalent of 140 grand a year. I was paying 25 pre all this, you know.
It's odd that you should mention the government, Heath, because they're also responsible for increasing the national living wage as well by a superb 10%. Did you see?
They can't pay the doctors. They can't pay the nurses. They're not paying the doctors and nurses, but they have no problem hitting private sector with a wage increase.
Indeed.
It's a fucking piss take.
Well, before he goes off on too much of a rant, Richard, what is the take from you? What should operators be thinking about? Well, they're facing, I mean, some people are going to be facing some chunky old rises here.
Well, I mean, everybody is, right? Mm. Let's be really clear about this. And it's not 10%. I hate to break it to you. It's 9.8% if you happen to be already over 23, but 30% of our workforce isn't.
Yeah.
And they will want a much chunkier increase, courtesy of our government. In fact, if you happen to be under 18, your increase is 21%. So the actual, when you look at it in the round, it's going to be closer to 11.5% for the average operator, which is an extraordinary number.
So sack all the kids, is that the solution?
You're not good at maths, are you, Ed?
No.
What are the solutions? Well, if you want to just cover it through price increases, you'd have to put your prices up by circa 4%, and that would just cover the cash increase. That wouldn't maintain margins. And that's assuming that businesses are currently running on about a 30% labour percentage, and lots aren't. Actually, lots are more than that, and therefore it's a bigger price increase. And let's be honest, it's kind of price increases have been quite prevalent over the last 12 months, but for other reasons, in short. So you've got to start looking at various cost management tools across the board. And we've seen a few over the last years. You know, things like kind of paying at tables, order at tables are really great ways of making your businesses a bit more efficient. But I think we've got to look at it beyond that. We saw a bit about people looking at opening hours and whether certain days were sustainable to open, and businesses looking at closing on quieter days. Yeah, not just for labour reasons, but for energy reasons and the like. When we're out there talking to customers, I think it just brings everything back into focus. January is always a big labour month because after the joys of the Xmas period, and I think we have seen some good numbers, we published our growth numbers yesterday, and we saw kind of circa 11% growth on 2022 throughout the period of December, which is a nice number. But I think, you know, 8% of that's inflation, and let's not forget 2022 was a bit soft. It was more heavily impacted by things like rail strikes and the like. But as we head into January and those sales are tougher, kind of focus comes on cost management, and we get a lot of inquiries and people looking to us to kind of go, well, kind of, what are you doing, and how could you know, how can, what are the top tips for better labour management? Kind of, if we want to dive into those a bit, probably our number one at the moment.
Give us your top ones, yeah.
Looking at things like Slack tasks. So Slack's a terminology we came up with kind of over a decade ago, but effectively it's when you've got staff in and you're not that busy. You need the staff in because they won't work on sort of 2-3 hour shifts. They'll need 5 hour shifts, otherwise they'll go to other jobs, and we saw no end of that kind of a couple of years ago. But making sure that they're doing what they're doing when they're quiet, and looking at what they can be doing when they're quiet, and moving many more of those tasks into those quiet times. One of the obvious ones for us, just to give a keen example, is sort of chef prepping and kitchen prep. Forever, the afternoon has been the better time to prep, unless you've got sort of ingredients that have to be prepared on the morning of a service, and not many of us do. Use the afternoon time for prepping. But whenever, more often than not, when we go into a business, they've got a full brigade in early doors to prep the food for that day and into the week and for other times. But that costs a lot. And then they're twiddling their thumbs between services or in those quieter afternoon times and looking at tasks like kitchen prep and other such things, road to writing, most pertinently for us, that there are activities that can be done during trading times and keeping your staff as busy as possible. One of our biggest bugbears is overstaffing, would you believe it? And overstaffing is really bad for two reasons. Firstly, clearly, it costs you no end of cash, but actually, we see the worst levels of service when you're too busy. We'll tell you that you need 1.2 people working, you've got three, and so what you end up with is two people having a really good chat and the one person running around like a blue-ass fly, and quite rightly, all of your customers staring at the two people having a chat, getting really frustrated with it.
Because
we're just not being looked at. And I'm afraid there's still too much of that. You know, the midweek sessions being overstaffed because people are too afraid to get down to minimum staffing levels. I think kind of, you know, in January we all question what a minimum staffing level should be in a business, and kind of how do you broach that and have those sort of slightly awkward conversations again, what's the right number of people to operate this business. And maybe now more than ever, we've got to challenge those what we might have done previously.
Absolutely.
And is staffing still as much of a challenge as it was? It just seems to be being talked about a little bit less now than it was before.
In terms of recruitment, you mean?
In terms of recruitment,
I think we're in a better place, but I don't think we're in a great place. And you know, that's part of the challenge here, is that it's not as bad as it was. People aren't talking about it as much as they were, but I don't think you'd speak to anybody you certainly wouldn't speak to many people that are telling you they've got a full brigade. There are still a number of vacancies out there, and that makes it a challenge, but in the grand scheme of things, not as bad as it was.
I'm just conscious we're over time. Heath, I mean, very quickly, what are you doing? What's your strategies to deal with the increasing?
Well, like you complained earlier, I closed my site in Hayward's Heath the first 4 days this week just to give the team a break, but we're doing winter hours there starting next week, where we'll be closed Mondays, Tuesday lunch and Sunday evenings. And then Highgate, just, we're quite lucky, we're quite consistently busy up there, but just trimming the hours, giving people time off, and just trying to manage it as best as possible. It's not easy.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Brilliant. Okay, guys. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but thank you very much for that. You're listening to the Lock In podcast, and we are at the end of this episode. So we try and start the new year on a more positive footing, despite Heath's best efforts to drag us down to his level. And we've heard a few things. So plenty of challenges. We're not denying or brushing that under the carpet. But come on, any positives, Heath? Come on, give me a positive. Brilliant. Excellent. Silence. Well done, Heath.
I think
a positive will be a change in government, maybe a government who understands us. I think we're dreaming if we think we're getting any more help. Energy prices coming down, great. Let's get inflation down. Hopefully, you know, you're just going to survive the next 3 months of doom and gloom.
Indeed. Well, he managed to get an exit right in at the end there.
I know. He always does.
Yes, go on. Nicky, what about you? Anything positive that you've...
I think the fact that everything's stabilising when it comes to prices is probably the main thing. I mean, again, like I was saying about before Christmas, though, if it can't get much worse, then it can only get better, can't it? So
it's like, but it's almost like the government's beating us up, kicking the shit out of us. So, you know, getting people to stop spending money, stop going out, ruining businesses, scuttling the economy, and then go, all right, okay, let's just make it a bit better now. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just don't understand their logic.
I mean, maybe it's they just don't care.
Oh, I was going
to
say that.
I just don't think they have the mental capacity to understand the economics of running the country.
And they don't care.
They got rid of Scholar. They got rid of him. They get rid of anybody who's got any brains on how to run the country. And they just go in there with their, you know, their, what do you call it, GSEC, whatever you guys do over in this country, economics. And they try and run a country like that. And they just don't have the understanding.
I did GCSE economics
in Australia.
Yeah, sure. I think they're just morons, basically. And they're just a bunch of gifters.
But she, grifters. Kate made a very good point. She kind of said they get it. They just don't care. They don't care. They see us as a collateral damage, yeah.
Damage.
In the fight.
Yeah.
To try and solve the problems the economy are facing. I mean, I find
that...
Yeah,
it's just mental, isn't it? It's just like, we're collateral damage of their bad policy.
Yeah, but we are
the collateral damage of them screwing us over on electricity contracts. We're collateral damage on their mismanagement of the government. Like, it's just of the country. It's unbelievable. They go and do all their shady little deals on the side and they ruin the economy and we're collateral damage on that. And we're supposed to sit there and go, okay, well, that's the way it is. Fuck them. And how dare they?
Also, it's being penalised for being adaptable and flexible, and because the sector has had to change and adapt because of everything that's going on. Mm. And they're going, well, actually, we know that someone else is going to come and take over that.
But you imagine, but there's going to be a point where people look at investment into the UK hospitality sector and go, fucking hell, man, there's no point because. It's such high risk right now and low reward.
And the irony.
Why would you bother?
And the irony is, we're the engine for growth. We are the industry that will help.
And you want to encourage tourism? What are you going to come here and what? Eat at TGI Fridays? Oh, welcome to England. Look at this. And I go, great, we've just come from America. Wow, I want to go to an English pub. Look, no, we don't have those anymore. We decided the bad places.
They will be able to go to a Wetherspoon, Steve.
Oh, yeah, great. And their fancy toilets and carpet. Great.
Should mention that. Anyway, let's draw a line under this before he gets too depressing, because we did get some positives there.
We did.
And I'm sure he will drag us back down.
But you did that positives. On purpose, because you started talking about the government.
Well, I did,
you knew, and you then pushed them a bit more going, because they just don't care, knowing that it'd kick off.
They don't fucking care. They take the piss. These bastards.
You've done it again, Nicky. Right, that is it for this episode. We will be back in a couple of weeks with more pub-related fun. In fact, we're going to be a very highbrow topic of pub toilets. So,
are we really going to talk about toilets?
Expect plenty of toilet humour, Heath. It'll be fine.
Fuck you, seriously. You're giving me the shits thinking about it.
Heath is off to a spa in Centre Park because his wife wants him to do that. And that is it. So until then, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, recommend to your friends, colleagues and aunties. We will see you in a couple of weeks.